Welcome to this week's Third Opinion Podcast. This week, we'll tell you about an organization that started in a living room in Los Angeles 21 years ago and now has become a worldwide organization fighting anti-Semitism. And we'll take a look at the new relationship between Israel and Turkey. That and so much more. And don't forget, you can get your third opinion wherever you download your podcasts. And now, this week's Third Opinion Podcast. Good afternoon, or good morning, or good evening, whenever you're joining us. This is the Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions. I am Mike Deason.
I'm Lorene Jaffe.
And we're on WKDW and the podcast. We're so thrilled that you are with us today. A lot going on, Lorene.
We do, but it's a big month. So before we jump in, you know, I'm remiss that we didn't talk about this last week, right? Because last week we had just entered into the month of Elul. It is the sixth month on the Hebrew annual calendar, leading to the seventh month which leads us to Rosh Hashanah for Tishrei. So we are now, by the time you will hear this show, probably about less than three weeks away from Rosh Hashanah 5783. Rosh Hashanah will begin on sundown, September 25th.
Can I tell you the craziest thing about Erev Rosh Hashanah?
Sure.
Okay. I am for those of you who don't live in the Tampa Bay area, Tampa Bay Buccaneers are big here. Erev Rosh Hashanah is on September 25th. The Bucks play Green Bay at 4:25. Now, fortunately, our temple has services at 8:30. I'm going to the late services, praying that I don't have to leave the Bucks game early so I can get home, take a quick shower, and make it for Erev Rosh Hashanah, because I can't miss that. The Glazers, who own the Bucks and are friends of mine, I want to go to them and go, why did you have a 4:20?
Well, I don't know that they have much say in it, but yeah. But so I was going to add, so when we begin the month of Elul, it's really sort of the 40 days of Teshuvah, because
right
after Rosh Hashanah, you know, we have the 10 days leading up to Yom Kippur. And, you know, it's interesting because Elul is the acronym for Ani Li Dodi V'Dodi Li, which is I am my beloved, so my beloved is mine. Which is really from Shir Shirim, the Song of Songs, right? And this is really that month of when it's referencing that really in that passage. It's talking about we as Israel as Hashem's bride, but it's also sort of the beloved. It's that also our personal relationship that with God, that intimate one-on-one. And, you know, there are other times where that acronym, two other times and the acronym comes up. Once is in the Megillah of Esther. Another time is in the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy, and one reference is regarding the circumcision of our hearts, which is really about our relationship with Hashem. And then the other one in the Megillah of Esther is really about our relationship with our fellow Jew and fellow man, and really important when we're talking about that with Elul and this time that we're in a time of reflection. So I pray everybody finishes this year well, that you end strong, that we can begin again new, well and strong. So it's going to be, you know, this is a very exciting time leading into the new year.
It is a good month beforehand for a religious standpoint. So news-wise this week, a lot going on.
Yeah.
And Lorene, one of the things that really hit me, and you and I have talked about this before, that one out of three Germans believes that Israel is treating the Palestinians in the same way as the Nazis treated the Jews prior to the beginning of the Holocaust.
Really?
And my concern is that Israel is doing a poor job of public relations. I am really worried about this, Lorene. Even with young Jewish kids, many of whom are supporting BDS, boycott, diversion, and sanctions, for those of you who don't know, I don't think Israel is doing a good job. I'm really concerned about that.
Yeah, you know, well, Europe's a little different than America, right? In Europe, there is they have a larger tidal wave, if you will, of the anti-Semitism that comes from the Muslim extremists, right? And that has been sort of embedded in Europe for multiple decades. You see it in America really starting in the 1990s, especially on college campuses.
College campuses, Lorraine. We are losing this generation.
Well, I don't know if I want to say we're losing. I mean, look, I think thank God for organizations like Stand With Us who we're going to talk with today. But, you know, again, it begins in the home and it begins with educating your children, because there are so many more haters out there that if the children aren't educated and don't understand when they hear these false accusations, you know, it's very easy for them to become susceptible to it.
Right. But how many times a week do we do stories about kids on Jewish campuses who are accusing Israel of apartheid?
I actually think the number of Jewish students who are not is substantially significantly greater. And quite frankly, I actually believe that many of the organizations on campus, the Jewish organizations, are you know, they're having great success, and they're doing more good than what these other students are doing harm. But I will say it was interesting, even this week, let's just put in perspective really quickly this poll that was taken in Germany, and then I want to talk about the New York information on the Holocaust, and this again goes to lack of education. So in Germany, that really, like you said, it sort of sent a chill up my spine too, that you would have, you know, this number of people that actually believe this. So it was a very specific question that was asked in this poll. It said, what the state of Israel is doing to the Palestinians today is in principle no different than what the Nazis and the Third Reich did to the Jews. And it said, do you agree, strongly disagree, strongly agree, et cetera. 36% of those asked said they agreed or strongly agreed. 36%. That's a third of the people.
A third of them, right.
And that is, you know, when I think about Germany, you think about, you know, obviously the history there and the strides that Germany has made to make reparations and its relationship with modern day Israel. That's highly alarming. But again, I think it goes back to the Islamist movement there that have been sort of, you know, infiltrating for decades now and sort of spreading the lies and the hate. But then there was in New York, you know, they recently passed a law in New York that requires, when it comes to art that was looted from Jews, for instance, during World War II, or where Jews were forced to sell, you know, like how the Nazis literally stole, you know, not just the Jewish, they were trying to destroy Jewish identity, but also Jewish wealth, Jewish inheritance, everything. So they actually have this new law within the museum that was going to require the Met and multiple museums to identify artwork that was looted from Jews. Like, they now are required to do that as an educational piece. And why that's so important is because apparently, you know, in 2020, an organization called the Claims Conference, which represents Jews seeking compensation for the Holocaust, found that 60% of New Yorkers did not know that 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust.
You're kidding. I didn't see that.
Yeah. 58% of them could not name a single concentration camp. 19% of them said they believed Jews actually caused the Holocaust. And 43% had never heard of Auschwitz.
Wait, these are Jewish people?
No, these are New Yorkers.
Oh, New Yorkers. Okay. All right.
But still New Yorkers. I mean, New York City.
I mean, obviously. Oh, my goodness.
They're New Yorkers. And that's the point of how abysmal the Holocaust education is in this country. I mean, thank God the state of Florida has mandatory Holocaust education. I mean, our governor, I know you don't like Ron DeSantis, but Governor DeSantis did just issue another $5 million to the Florida Holocaust Museum grant.
Yeah, and he did. Okay. I do not like Governor DeSantis, but I am thankful for that.
It's so important, right?
I can see that not all people are all good or all bad. So I appreciate that. So let me say that, although I don't like DeSantis, I am very appreciative of that and thought it was a good thing. Okay.
Because it goes
shocked. I am complimenting him.
All right. There you go. Y'all heard it here first. All right. Right. Mike. But the point is that, you know, that's such an important piece because in Florida, Holocaust education is mandated and the Florida Holocaust Museum takes on that responsibility. They're responsible for providing that those educational tools to teachers and to the students. And it's, you know, and thank God we do that in Florida, but the majority of states in this country don't. And so we recognize this is a real issue in our modern times. And so I think, you know, again, everybody, each one of us, Mike, every Jew listening to this broadcast, if you're not a Jew and you love the Jewish people and you love Israel, you know, you also have responsibility. Each one of us has a responsibility to be a voice for good and to speak truth against the onslaught of lies, because there's no limit to it on social media, right?
There's no question. My only thought is that if I were in Israel, I would have a whole department to try to get the truth out about Israel and what's going on. And I've got to be honest, I think sometimes Israel does not help itself with the establishment of homes in the West Bank. And I think sometimes Israel just doesn't pay attention to the public relations matters that you have to deal with in the rest of the world. But what concerns me most is that young Jewish college students are coming out against Israel.
Not most.
I agree with you. Not most. That was hyperbole.
But we do see a huge percentage. Right. There is at least enough that we should be concerned. And we are going to talk with Stan, with us, the executive director, later today, who's talking about what they're doing for education. But I got to just comment on one thing, because the West Bank is Judea Samaria, an area C, where people call the Jews their living settlers. Area C is actually controlled by Israel, according to the Oslo Accords. What is never spoken about are the thousands, and not just, a couple hundred here, like tens of thousands of Palestinians who make illegal settlements there every year, and they're being funded by NGOs in Europe. This is real. Nobody ever talks about it. That is illegal and unlawful. They're not supposed to be doing that. And it's a real thing. Everybody always wants to point the finger at Israel, and that's a problem. And that is part of the huge story that's never being reported on and spoken about. And I just had to say something about that because it's really important. But speaking of the West Bank and the Palestinians, I mean, there's two big stories coming out, one from the Palestinian Authority, the other one from Gaza. But this week, one of the district governors in the Palestinian Authority in the Salfit district put forth a new law. He was very excited to celebrate their new law in the Salfit district, which means they're going to be one enforcing the law that Palestinians under no circumstances can ever sell land to Jews that is considered a crime against the state. Jews are not allowed. All Palestinian establishments must remove any sign that's in Hebrew, so they can't, they cannot do any business with any Jewish settler. They cannot sell to them. They cannot do trade with them. They cannot work with them. They cannot hire them. They are not allowed to in any way communicate with them. They're not allowed to illegally sell or transfer land to them because it would be illegal under their law to do that. They're putting up signs throughout the entire district saying Jews are not allowed. Jews are not welcome here. And I mean, this is a big deal. This is a huge stance being taken by the governor of the Salfit district. So, I mean, you know, again, Jews not allowed. So if Israel said Palestinians and Arabs not allowed, the whole world would be in an outcry. The Palestinians do it and the media is literally silent.
Yeah. It is very strange. It is upsetting that the media sometimes ignores it. And I've been part of the media for a long time, but it is upsetting that they ignore that. I mean, it's just crazy.
I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. And because this is real. I mean, this is what's happening, right? So why are we not talking about it? Why is it a one-sided conversation always? And I think that's, you know, you always want to look to, you want to talk about apartheid. I mean, I just take the, all you have to do is just, why don't we just post that law? If we removed, didn't tell anybody this was from the Palestinian Authority, and we just like put the law up there, they'd be like, oh my God, you know, like, how could you say that? Like, who's doing this, right? I mean, that's what you call apartheid.
Absolutely. And again, we say this every week. But in apartheid, you would not have Muslims members of the Knesset. You would not have Muslim members of the Supreme Court of Israel. That's where it all falls apart. I don't understand where people can't see that, you know?
I know. Because what's happened is you have the organizations, right? Like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, they're using the apartheid language. But if you read between the lines, they're changing the definition of apartheid to meet their own new quasi definition to satisfy their anti-Semitism, right? Because they know it's an inflammatory word, and it brings you back. It invokes these memories of South Africa. And that's what they're trying to do. Even though if you read the fine print, they've completely changed the definition. It doesn't mean what it originally meant. And nobody's really paying attention to that, and that's why they get away with it. So the other thing that happened this week, which I think is just horrible, in Gaza executed 5 people this past week, 2 of whom were individuals who Hamas.
It was Hamas that did it, right?
And Hamas accused them of collaboration with Israel. So that's punishable by death. Any normalization with Israel. So it'd be, apparently 2 individuals were executed by Hamas this week for quote-unquote collaboration with Israel. I mean that just says it there, folks. Like, I mean, I don't know how you have peace with someone like that.
Look, we know they're barbaric at times. I mean, I hate to say it, but they are barbaric.
They're horrible to their own people. That's why when people say, oh, we're Students for Justice in Palestine, no, you're not. You actually don't care about the Palestinian people. Like, why don't you ever speak out on behalf of the Palestinian people suffering in Gaza under the hands of Hamas? Like I don't understand it. The youth in Hamas in Gaza are constantly crying out for the world's help, not against Israel, but against Hamas and the government. Like, and the world just ignores it. So I'm just, you know, I'm sorry, I'm on a tear tonight. I got this story.
Go ahead.
The strangest story, you know, obviously we know the Inquisition in Europe. We know everybody sort of really focuses on the beginning of the Inquisition in Spain, which was called Sephrad at the time, which is where Sephardic comes from, right? But the Inquisition really even began earlier than that, beginning in England in the 12th and 13th centuries. And this week, there was this, you know, there was this mystery solved. I guess in 2004, construction workers in the city of Norwich, which is in East England, uncovered a mass grave that contained, you know, what they said, at least 17 bodies, 6 adults and 11 children, in what looks like these people have been like murdered or drowned in a well of sorts. And so there's a team that was investigating, looking into DNA samples, et cetera. And they discovered that these were Jews who were most likely victims of anti-Semitic violence, who had been killed sometime between the years of 1161.
Going way back, anti-Semitism is forever.
Well, that's really when the Inquisition really began, because it began in England, and then it sort of with the Crusades, and then it followed into Spain, Sephrad, and, you know, and then it of course went to the New World, into Latin and South America. I mean, the Inquisition went on for some like 600, 700 years. I mean, Jews were having to hide their identity and run from these people for hundreds of years. So that was really, that I thought it was a very, but it's what I was the most amazed about is how the Jewish DNA evidence, and we've had experts on the show talking about this, was so strong that they were able to identify
the Ashkenazi Jews,
those victims, which was just so amazing. Well, Ashkenazi and Sephardic, right? So we know that the Sephardic genealogy, the patriarch lines, is about 500, and the Ashkenazi is only closer to 100, but there's a continuation of that, the development of this DNA evidence. So I was just so amazed that they could like figure out that these 17 bodies in the bottom of this well, that all looked like they had their heads bashed in, you know, that they were able to realize, figure out that those were Jews. There was just so amazing.
It is pretty amazing. You know, one of the things that also was amazing this week is that Israel and Turkey once again have reestablished relations. Irat Lilian is the ambassador to Turkey. And I mean, Israel and Turkey have not always gotten along. And I have my doubts about where Turkey stands, whether they're with us or against us, whether they're with Syria, whether they're, I don't exactly know. But it's sort of interesting that they have reestablished relations. And this is the Israeli ambassador to Turkey talking about how she thinks this relationship will work and how important it is to Israel to get along with another country in the Middle East. Let's take a listen.
First of all, I would like to start by saying that our relations with Turkey are historical relations that have known their ups and downs throughout the years. We have seen better times, we've seen worse times. But right now, I think we are on a path of repairing relations. And if we say that we are aiming to be good partners, good regional partners, that would be very accurate, because this is a goal that is going far beyond the nomination of ambassadors or any other symbolic, important political step. But I think that we should see things opting for the better in the larger sense.
Well, certainly this is something Israel's desired. How do you see why Turkey is making this sort of diplomatic change, especially President Erdogan? Many analysts believe he's hoping also that improving relations with Israel, for example, he'll improve relations with the United States. Some see the influence of the Abraham Accords and Israel's new ties with the Gulf as a factor here. How do you see it?
Well, for sure, each and every country has its own interests, and these interests are important political interests and geopolitical interests as well. We're living in a very unstable region, and of course, Abraham Accords have contributed a lot to improving the atmosphere in our region. But I think that right now, it is the moment for all partners or all possible partners to unite. And on this aspect, I think both the Israeli and the Turkish partners are really reading the map very correctly, that we should work together for more security and stability in the region, knowing that there are stumble blocks. But nevertheless, this joint effort is the interest of both the Turks and the Israelis.
Well, let's look at some of those stumble blocks. One of them is the open presence of Hamas, senior Hamas officials in Turkey. They maintain an office there. Many people thought that would be a precondition for Israel to restore full relations, that Turkey would perhaps close that office. Is this an issue under discussion between Jerusalem and Ankara?
I wouldn't like to go into the details, but I would say that as from the beginning of the process of repairing the ties between the two countries, we have agreed to disagree. There are issues on which we don't agree with the Turkish side. There are issues in which the Turkish side do not agree with us. The Hamas issue is a very important matter for us. Nevertheless, we don't see necessarily eye to eye regarding the presence of the Hamas office in Istanbul. Of course, this is part of the dialogue. We are trying to convince the Turkish side that it is essential for increasing security in our region, for combating terrorism. But as I said, I would not go into details, but indeed this is an issue.
Now, of course, Turkey also has expectations. We should note that Turkey and Israel did maintain very healthy economic relations even during the diplomatic freeze. But Turkey would like to extend that further into the area of the development of East Mediterranean gas, which could be complicated for Israel due to its current partnership with Cyprus and Greece. Is there a path forward for Israel and Turkey in terms of the East Mediterranean gas issue?
Israel has never stepped back from its commitment to the East Mediterranean gas pipeline project. And we have emphasized, as from the beginning, that our bilateral relations with each and every one of the partners you mentioned is not going to be on the account of the others. We believe that having good ties with both Greece, Cyprus, and Turkey is the interest of course, of the state of Israel. And we're not giving up of all we have achieved with Greece and Cyprus. Nevertheless, we believe that having better relations with Turkey will just enhance all the good fruits of what we have achieved so far in each and every possible field.
Right. Now, the pandemic is over. Tourism is back. Israelis are again flocking to Turkey, one of its favorite tourism destinations. But we did recently see a real security scare, concern over Israeli citizens in Turkey being the target, in that case, of Iranian agents. Talk a little about the issue of security for Israelis in Turkey in light of what happened recently.
Well, I should start by saying that there is still a very strong travel advice for Israelis to go to Turkey. Many of them decided that Turkey is a wonderful tourism destination. I cannot agree less with them, but I would have asked all my compatriots to be vigilant and to treat seriously travel advice when it is existing. But right now, we are not under the threat that we faced a few weeks ago or almost 2 months ago, and during which the cooperation between Israel and Turkey was exceptional. And these immediate threats were taking off our table, and I'm very thankful for it. I'm very thankful for the services from both sides who have worked so hard together for the sake of our citizens. And I believe that this cooperation would enable Israeli tourists to come here safely, especially when the Israeli flights are going to come back to Turkey very soon, hopefully.
She makes some good points, but, you know, it doesn't sound like she's 100% in line with everything they're doing. Wouldn't you agree, Laureen?
Yeah, I mean, look. It's, you know, I think we just have to wait and see what happens, right? I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes between Israel and Turkey we don't know about.
I've got to say, this is horrible for me to say, I don't trust Turkey.
Look, you know, Erdogan, he's already made it really clear. I mean, he put out his 20-year plan for the caliphate, right? I mean, he sort of is competing with the supreme leader of Iran to establish the next great caliphate. You know, and he is obviously tremendous persecution of his people, anyone who disagrees with him. He's really changed Turkey in some dramatic ways. Turkey used to be a very free, multicultural, multi-religious epicenter, and is becoming increasingly more sort of dogmatic Islamicist under his rule. So, you know, a lot of things to be concerned about there with him. But at the same time, he has been partnering with Israel on Iran, which is very important.
I'm glad. And again, the old phrase, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Everybody is scared to death of Iran.
Yeah, I mean, Iran is just, they're just a loose cannon. I mean, they've proven themselves to be, you know, an agitator, a financier of terrorism and hate. I mean, you know, people don't really talk about it, but the Islamists, the extremists, I mean, they don't care if they kill Muslims. They consider most Muslims to be sort of, you know, not real Muslims anyway, because you're not as extremist. I mean, they've killed tens of thousands, I'd even argue hundreds of thousands of Muslims in the Middle East and in North Africa, because they're not as extreme as them through their different radical arms. So it's Iran is a threat, not just to the Middle East, but truly a threat to the world. So it'll be interesting. So,
it is. Why don't we do this? We have a terrific interview about an effort to fight anti-Semitism by a group led by a former British native. And we will do that right after the break. This is The Third Opinion on WKDW in the podcast.
That interview in just a moment. But have you looked at our webpage where you can listen to previous editions of the Third Opinion podcast, find out more about our hosts, and leave a comment or two? And now, back to the Third Opinion podcast and that interview.
Welcome back to the Third Opinion on WKDW in the podcast. Michael Dickinson, Lorene, tell us all about his group, Stand With Us.
Right. So really excited to have Michael with us. So Michael Dickson, he is the executive director of Stand With Us, which is headquartered in Jerusalem, Israel, right across the street from the King David Hotel. By the way, if you're ever in Israel, you're always welcome to stop by. They have educational tours and all kinds of information for you if you want to stop. But, you know, I've known Stand With Us as an on-campus, college campus organization, helping to equip students on campus to fight the anti-Semitism, to sort of fight the lies, the attacks against Jews and student government in different places. But I didn't realize they had been around for 21 years and really how they came into being. And Michael shares a moment when it did. And I do remember the moment very vividly during the Intifada in the early 2000s, I believe it was 2001. And he's going to share that. But I think a couple of interesting things you'll definitely want to take note of, because education is really their key component. But they do a lot more, including pro bono work. So if you are a student of any age, any grade or level, and you feel like you're being discriminated against and it's anti-Semitism or there's some type of anti-Israel bias, his organization also has hundreds of pro bono attorneys that can provide assistance in legal action to help you fight those issues, because U.S. law protects you and they'll enforce those rights. So with that, Michael Dickson opens up and sort of shares with us how it came into being.
We're born 21 years ago, as you said, in a living room in Los Angeles. It was the living room of Russ and Jerry Rothstein. And, you know, at that time in the early 2000s, as you remember, it was a terrible time for terrorism in Israel. There were horrific attacks happening day in, day out, buses blowing up, cafes, restaurants, places where young people would gather like discos and pizzerias. And there was barely a day that went by where you didn't hear of some kind of attack. It was before Israel had built that security barrier that manages to stop so many terrorist attacks. And yet, all too often in the American media and in the Western media as well, things weren't being reflected accurately. And a terrible incident happened in May 2001, where two boys taken the day off school and were in their home in Tekoa in Israel. And they went missing and their parents didn't know where they were. Their names were Kobi Mandel and Yosef Ishran. And eventually they were found and they had been brutally murdered by terrorists to the extent that they had to be identified by their dental records. It was a horrible, horrible murder. And yet in the Los Angeles Times, for instance, it was reported on almost as if they were responsible for their own death because they were quote unquote settlers. So Russ and Jerry Rothstein called a bunch of people together in their living room to ask them what was being done, the kind of many different representatives of the community, and ask what was being done to tell the truth about Israel, to educate people about what was really happening, and to combat some of the anti-Semitism that so often surrounds these issues. And they didn't get the kind of answers that they wanted to, so they decided to do something themselves. And they started an organization that grew from a living room very quickly all across the United States and North America, and internationally now in Canada, in the UK, in Brazil, in Australia, South Africa, and Europe, and many other places as well. So what we do is build a movement of support for Israel. We educate in the high school, in the middle school, and on campus, and to the adult community. And we teach people what Israel is really all about. And at the same time, we counter anti-Semitism in all its forms, whether that's physical acts, horrific abuse that some people get, and boycott attempts as well. So that's what we're doing all of the time.
It's interesting, you know, I did not realize Stand With Us was actually born out of that tragic event of the brutal murder of those two young boys. I still remember where I was when I was watching the news and learning about that. I just, it so stilled me and shocked me that this was happening and how the world was so silent to it.
Absolutely.
Or not only just silent, but as you mentioned, the LA Times, they completely reversed it. They took something of these innocent children, this brutal murder, and made it as if somehow Israel was the villain, you know, and we still obviously see that today in mainstream media across the globe. And so so it's really interesting learning that, that it was born out of that and understanding your purpose. You know, I know you mentioned education. I know when we spoke earlier this week, you said education. You know, and education can mean a lot of things, you know, to a lot of different people as far as Israel is concerned and fighting anti-Semitism. But I know that Stand With Us, for instance, is on college campuses, but beyond that, also doing a lot of work now with younger children, with high school and middle-aged children. You know, take a moment and share with the audience sort of what your organization Stand With Us is doing in those spaces for the children that are on the front lines.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we give young people the space to build a relationship with Israel. You know, Israel is so important in Jewish life and so important to the vast majority of Jews. And we want to make sure that people understand what Israel is and the place that Israel plays in the Jewish story. You know, we are indigenous to the land of Israel. That's where I'm speaking to you from right now. It's the place where our Jewish history begins. Our Jewish present continues and our Jewish future will take place. But unfortunately, there's a whole raft of misinformation and deliberate misinformation from so many quarters about what Israel really is and Jewish rights. And we believe that we need to teach very clearly and accurately the history of Israel and its connection to the Jewish people, both to young Jews and to other people as well. And so what we try and do is teach it in an inspiring way. You know, there's such low information about what Israel is, and there's misinformation about what Israel is, but there's also low inspiration. And there's so much that is inspiring about Israel. It's breathtaking for me as somebody who gets to live here, but to see the gifts that Israel gives to the world and the medical innovations and this incredible startup nation and the resilience of Israelis themselves and so much more. And of course, the richness of the history. This is the cradle of civilization for the three main religions. It's the place where, the only place where Jews have called home. So there's so much to teach about. And unfortunately, sometimes you get dismissed even in formal Jewish education. So we try and complement that. We have a wonderful middle school curriculum that's innovative and interactive and allows young people to build their own connection points with Israel. We host multiple school groups here in Israel on bar and bat mitzvah trips and on school trips, and of course, birthright tours, et cetera. And we meet young people where they are. And that means that they may wanna have very open and difficult conversations. And that's completely fine. We want to have a very open environment for people to ask any questions they can, because I've seen it with multiple groups of all different backgrounds. When you give people the space to ask and question, you know, they see the truthfulness of Israel's side and they see what Israel really is. We've got nothing to hide whatsoever. So we're all about education. And ever since we started 21 years ago, we've been producing amazing booklets and brochures, print materials that people can download from our website at standwithus.com, addressing all different issues from Jerusalem to the diversity of Israel to Israeli innovations, and to also tackling some of the accusations that are labeled at Israel as well. So from those print materials, we've obviously diversified and really pioneered on social media and in digital media. And so nowadays we're producing many videos and much interactive resources as well that people can access.
So if they wanted to, so let's say I'm a parent at home right now and I'm listening to you and I wanted to connect my child to some of these educational materials, how would I locate that online?
So they should first and foremost go to standwithus.com and they'll find there a tab with resources where they can see all of our resources that they may want to use themselves. We have all of our video resources in a kind of like Netflix style platform called Stand With Us TV. And we also have different booklets and brochures, and lots of it is all downloadable. Some of it is very short and straight to the brain. We know people don't have a lot of time, and some of it is much more involved when people want to delve into other issues. We also opened in the last year our Holocaust Education Center, and that's dedicated to really pioneering innovative teaching about the Holocaust and having primarily non-Jewish audiences understand what the Holocaust is and why they should be upstanders rather than bystanders against anti-Semitism in our times today. And of course, they can contact us via the website as well, standwithus.com, if they'd like to see our curriculum, our resources brought into their schools or into their communities. We're more than happy to do that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, the Holocaust education, I'm glad that you're doing that. I mean, here in the state of Florida, we're one of only a handful of states that mandate that education. It was passed by the legislature and our governor, Governor DeSantis, just recently, just in the last few weeks, came and personally, you know, handed a $5 million check to the Florida Holocaust Museum to help fund the educational efforts that are mandated, because there's still a lot of schools in Florida, even though it's mandated, they don't follow through. And so, you know, they've been very focused, the governor and the legislature has been very focused on ensuring that that required education and those standards are being met. So,
It's so important because, you know, according to recent surveys, there's such a shocking lack of information about the Holocaust.
Right.
And at the same time, you have rising anti-Semitism in the U.S. and around the world. You know, anti-Jewish bigotry was responsible for over half of the religiously based hate crimes in the United States in recent times. So that's a crazy thing to be happening concurrently. And soon we'll be living in a world that doesn't have any eyewitnesses. And so we need to teach, you know, the next generations to remember what the Holocaust was in order to fight against anti-Semitism today.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting you say that because it's there's no lack of disinformation on the web, on the internet. And, you know, and it's not just the Holocaust. I mean, I think there's also, you know, you have the Inquisition, right? The Inquisition went on for a stretch over 500, 600 years. If you bring in England, you know, Jews having to, you know, pretty much removing the entire, almost wiping out the entire Sephardic Jewish world. And then before that you had the Crusades, and before that you had Rome. And, you know, it's like,
there's a reason they call it the longest hatred.
Right. So it is a continual impact, which sort of gets me to two other questions on the education piece. I want to talk about ethnic studies in a moment, but first I want to get a little more nitty gritty on the college campuses. You know, I know for us here personally, University of South Florida, there's a tremendous amount of anti-Jew, anti-Israel activity through SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine, and other related organizations, constantly trying to take over the student government and push, you know, student legislative bills, in essence, you know, calling Israel an apartheid and calling for boycott of Israel. And I know Stand With Us has been very active in helping equip college students to fight these battles. So let's get a little nitty gritty because, you know, college campuses are sort of ground zero for our kids. You know, how is Stand With Us interacting with them, you know, and what are sort of some of the longer range plans and how to continue to equip these kids to fight these battles?
Yeah, it's super important. And the campus is really where Stand With Us started. You know, when we founded our organization, we realized that our campuses were where young people were really fighting the flames of anti-Semitism and dealing with such misinformation, so that it resulted in so often exclusion by young Jews. And still today, exclusion from so many causes. You know, if you're a feminist and a Jew, if you're in, you know, want to support a certain cause, you may run the risk of being excluded because you're considered to be a Zionist. And yet Zionism is an essential part of what the Jewish people's story is. So for a long time, we've been a leader in helping university students around the world confront anti-Israel activity on campus and anti-Semitic challenges. And we have a campus department that's reaching out all across the United States. We have leaders on campus who we call our Emerson Fellows, and they bring together about 150 outstanding student leaders every year. I'm actually flying this weekend to the UK, where I'll be meeting our UK Emerson Fellows. And what they do is create a grassroots network of educators on the ground on different campuses, including in Florida, of course. And they teach their peers, and they also help us to push back against BDS, that's boycott, divest, and sanction activity on their campuses as well. And we have to keep a constant eye on it because the climate on campus changes each year. And so we have a very dedicated team of professionals who are leading student-led teams all across campuses in all different regions, fighting that. And also when it comes from the faculty as well, which can be such a horrible experience for young people. You know, when you have faculty who are stopping students from getting good grades because they're doing something related to Israel, or they're trying to prevent travel to Israel on exchange trips. These are things that we hear about all the time. So we have a hotline for young people to be in touch with us. And where we need to, we give them legal support. We have a professional team on our staff who lead a pro bono team of hundreds of attorneys all across the United States who are willing to help students fight back against discriminatory BDS action on their campuses. And then, of course, when we see student government passing motions to ostracize Jews and to sideline Israel on campus, we also fight against that. So we have a very dedicated team that's constantly on guard about that.
So that's a really important point, by the way, you just made about the pro bono staff having over 100 lawyers sort of available. You know, we talked with other organizations here in the States that also provide that type of justice service, because we do see students and faculty, you know, Mike and I talk about this almost weekly, about universities here in the States or in Canada, where students and faculty are being harassed, blatantly discriminated against because of their Zionism or because of their pro-Israel stance. You know, whether it's being excluded from promotions or it's being excluded from certain programs within the university, students having their grades impacted, not having professors recommend them for certain things. I mean, it's a very real war on campus. So again, if a parent or a student is listening right now, and this is something they're going through, you know, how do they get a hold? Again, is it just go back to standwithus.com or is there?
Standwithus.com, and they can reach out to us through the website. Actually, they can report an anti-Semitic incident if one is happening on their campus. And if they want to be in touch with our legal team and get support and free advice, they go to standwithus.com/legal. And they'll have a form there where they can report what's going on, and we'll be happy to help them. And like you said, it's so important that university administrators also take action against this. It's something that is becoming pervasive, unfortunately. And, you know, there's something called the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which, you know, which actually prevents discrimination against people based on their race or color or national origin. And the Department of Education put out what they called a digital binder that specifies that Title VI protects all students, including Jewish students, from discrimination. And of course, it prevents against unlawful discrimination against Jewish students based on their ties to the State of Israel as well.
I thought he was terrific. And we have part two that will run next week. I didn't know about that organization before you found him, Laurie, and that was wonderful.
Absolutely. And you know, again, if you're a teacher, a principal, you work in a private school, public school, I mean, reach out. They've got all kinds of materials to help educate on Israel and Jewish causes, and I love his positive attitude. I love everything that they're doing. And so to go to your point, Mike, you know, I know you get upset because you're like, we're not doing enough. Israel's not doing enough to fight the battle. But, you know, there are so many organizations. And Stand With Us is just one amazing.
I agree. I support that. I wish there were more. I wish there were more. Okay. Couple of things that upset me. I'm going to go through my crazy list. Marjorie Taylor Greene for Biden's speech, which I'm sure you didn't like. I thought it was terrific, Laureen. But regardless, she did a meme of him as Adolf Hitler. I mean, and it got bad. This is the lady who said the Jewish space lasers were causing the forest fires in California.
Okay, yeah. So I don't agree with the meme. However, Biden's choice of blood red backdrop definitely, it's almost like it definitely evoked feelings of the Third Reich. Like when I think about like in Star Wars and they had like this one scene where it sort of also evoked this Third Reich picturesque thing, and it was like very, you know, scary. That's what I felt like. I'm like, what is with your like this?
Okay, I thought it was the best speech he's ever given. We're gonna disagree on that.
The lack of wisdom, and like who decided like that's the environment, like your backdrop. I mean, it's like it was very ominous. I'm like, what?
But still, I mean, putting memes with his
face. I understand, but it definitely, if you just looked at the photo, it was like, whoa, yeah, Biden, that was stupid.
Okay, now the other thing that really upset me is Yeshiva University.
Yeshiva University, yes.
Is fighting a lawsuit. Yeshiva University lost a lawsuit in which LGBTQ organizations were allowed to be recognized on campus, and Yeshiva University lost it, and now they're fighting that. That bothers me, Laureen. We are supposed to be accepting of everybody. I don't understand.
I mean, you know? I get it. At the same time, you know, it's a religious question. It's a religious issue. And I understand what Yeshiva University's argument is.
Well, where does it say you can't be gay in the Bible?
It's in the Torah, actually.
No, seriously. Yeah, I don't know. Let me explain to you folks.
It's in the book of Leviticus.
Laureen knows so much more than I do about the Bible and the Torah. Where does it say?
Yeah, it does. It talks about certain relationships. And so it's, I think from that perspective, you know, I understand why Yeshiva, like there is a place for that. Maybe it's not Yeshiva. Maybe it's at a Reform campus. I mean, at the same time, you know, it's a hard issue, right? I mean, I think you should be accepting and you know.
Absolutely. You and I have talked, we're in agreement on that. I mean.
Right. But at the same time, I also respect Yeshiva University. Like if that's something they believe strongly in, because this is what, you know, they believe in,
I don't
know, and their interpretation of Jewish law. Like it's like, you know, I don't want to force a religious institution to say you have to change your religious beliefs.
But I mean, it was a campus group. I have a friend that went to Yeshiva Law School. Honestly, it's a campus group. We should be open and accepting. I cannot support them on that. However, Laureen, you hear that music? That means we are out of time. Covered a lot of good subjects this week.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with us. This is Third Opinion. I'm Mike Deason.
I'm Laureen Jaffe.
Bye.
That's our show for this week. Hope you'll join us again next week. And don't forget, subscribe to the Third Opinion podcast wherever you get your podcast. And thanks for listening.